Welcome to episode 110 of the Scary Dad Podcast, where we're on our third straight week of talking about the year 1987.
Significant year.
Big one. It is the 19th of November, so get those turkeys in the brine if you haven't already. They need time to soak before you put the herbs and spices
inject
on
there. Inject them, like, get them ready.
Okay. It is a big... We're going to really try to close this out without going into an episode 4.
I think we'll be able to.
That's a whole month on a year. So we're spending an entire, like, the 12th of a year talking about a year. That's a big year. So I don't even think 87 was as prepared for what was going to happen as what happened in 87. Anyway, Mr. Gomez.
First, the old business.
Excellent. On this date in 1493, explorer Christopher Columbus lands on the island of San Juan Bautista, which would later be called Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
In 1911, the Doom Bar takes down two ships. What is the Doom Bar, you say? It's a sandbar. But strangely enough, it's a single sandbar that took out two ships in the same day. Took out the Island Maid and the Angela. And the Angela, everybody on it was killed except for the captain.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. They didn't just run up on the sandbar and actually cut a hole in the hull.
Yeah.
Because I got some funny sandbar stories.
But yeah, every now and then you just run up on them and you get stuck.
Got two of them. You know, I used to work on a cruise ship back in the day. It was a huge riverboat. Delta Queen Steamboat Company. They own three riverboats. And the biggest one, the pride of the fleet, was the American Queen, which was 7 stories tall, 350 feet long. It was a huge steamship. And their maiden voyage, they had a whole bunch of travel agents and shit on it. They were just doing like a publicity thing. They ran up on a sandbar and got stuck for 5 days, dude.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So they had to like boat in food for all these people, and you know the trash started getting overwhelming.
Why didn't they boat the people off?
They wanted to finish the boy. It was a 7-day trip, so okay. They just went ahead, stayed on there, enjoying the food and everything like that. But another funny one I had is Mike's father-in-law. He went fishing one day with George Armbruster, who at the time was running for sheriff of Lafayette Parish in Louisiana. They were real good friends at the beginning of the day. So they start fishing. They're doing some saltwater fishing, flat-bottom aluminum boat. They anchor up to go ahead and stop in one spot, try to catch some specks. Water dropped. He got stuck on a sandbar for like 3 hours. They were ready to kill each other by the time they got off because they were blaming each other for getting stuck on the sandbar. Awesome, awesome, awesome.
That is killer.
And they finally got somebody to pull them off the sandbar and be able to get out. But yeah, they were stuck there, nothing to drink, no food, few hours. They weren't happy with each other.
I can imagine. It always sucks when you're in a situation where somebody does something stupid, especially when you're like, no. Oh, man. And then you're just...
As you know, I used to do a lot of fishing back in the day. I used to do a lot of just freshwater and saltwater. And we had a lake house in Louisiana. And I remember I went one weekend, going to meet with the family. Going to meet my father-in-law owned the camp next to the one that we had. And I get there late at night. I'm tired. I want to go fishing the next morning. So even though it's like, you know, almost midnight, I want to get my boat ready so I can go ahead and get on the water in the morning. He had taken my boat out of the garage area that we had it in and put it where it got rained on and the cover had tore. So my boat was full of water at the bottom. I was fucking furious, dude. So I'm going, I'm bitching about that and he's apologizing and he pulls the plug out to drain the water out, puts the plug back in. I get in the boat the next morning. I lower it. We had automatic winches. We had a nice little setup back then. Lower the boat, head out to start fishing, find a little spot I want to get into with some tops. By myself, don't have the kids with me. I was like, it was a serious weekend of fishing. So I stop and I'm trolling along and I get a hit. So I stop. Tops are like trees we had put into water. We had certain spots we had planted Christmas trees where we were, you know, we only knew where they were. So I stop at this top and I'm fishing. I'm catching a few, got another few bites, and I look down and there's water at my feet. And I turn around and my motor is almost underwater. So I jump in the driver's seat, crank the motor, haul ass, get the water out. So I drain the water out, I go back. It's the funniest shit. I'm fucking furious at this point because my boat's leaking. I have no idea why. So I pass by the dock and I scream for help. Somebody comes down. I pass by again and I said, I need to lower it up. I need to pull the boat out of the water. I'm taking on water. He had taken the plug and put it in my aerator instead of the plug for the boat.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so every time I would stop, the boat would start taking on water and have to, like, crank it up. I was so mad.
Dude. Oh, no.
And what's funny is if I hadn't noticed that the water was at my feet, my boat would have been underwater. I never would have got it out.
Yeah, it just sunk.
Yeah.
Man, I missed those days, man.
Sorry, continue.
No. I mean, I don't remember what the problem was. I was too young. It was probably in 1987. I was probably like 10 or 11 years old. We lived in the Corpus in Portland. And my grandparents would come down and they'd have a boat. And it was just it's like a chaparral, just, you know, fishing boat. It wasn't, it was just a bay boat. It wasn't anything spectacular. It wasn't big. It wasn't small. But it had a little, you know, nice little Evinrude outboard. And you just, and we'd go out in the bay and fish, no big deal. One time they decided they were going to go channel fishing, so we had to cross the bay. So it was like a two-hour drive across the bay to the other side where we were going. I don't remember if I was told or if I wasn't told that it was a camping trip or if my dad just packed my gear. But, you know, it's like we're out in the middle of the water and we've been cruising up these channels forever. We just pull up on this house. You're talking about the cowboy last week. You just walked into somebody's random house. We just pull up onto this patio, and it's like, I assume we know these people. Dad gets out. Everybody kind of throws sleeping bags down, and we go, and they set up lights, and the sun goes down, and they're all fishing lights off this dock. I don't know anybody. I'm just fishing. And, dude, it's probably my most successful day fishing ever. Like, after a while, I just stopped putting bait on the hooks because they were hitting them. They were hitting them clean because we were fishing on the lights. So the fish would see the flash of the hook and bite it. So we were catching trout just like left and right. And just, I didn't know anything. Up comes a boat, shines some lights on us, wants to see some ID. Oh shit, everybody's drunk except for me, of course, because I was 11. And checks everybody's IDs. They're trespassing. That's not their house. It's not any of their friend's house. It's just a random house they saw that looked, that had tall grass in the yard. So they just assumed nobody would be coming by for a while. But one of the neighbors called and was like, "Oh, there's some kids partying on your dock." Even me, I was all terrified. It's like a whole bunch of 40-year-olds. It's like three. It's my dad, my grandfather, my uncle. It's like 3 40-year-old dudes, like, you know, 40, 50, 60-year-old dudes, you know, just night fishing, and there was not really anything illegal, but God, I was like, I thought we were going to jail, because that cop was mean. And he left us alone, and we actually ended up sleeping there. He's just like, "You're too drunk to drive the boat, so y'all just get your lines out of the water, and y'all go to bed." And I just remember, I can understand it now, because I've been on these rants where, for whatever reason, it's lights out and something happened during the day that I'm pissed about, and I'll lay there in the middle of the night and be like, "Motherfucker!" And that was like all three of them were doing that. And I was just laying in my sleeping bag, being like, "Please don't come back, cop. Please don't come back, cop." But that's my funny. It had nothing to do with the sandbar, but funny fishing stories are, you just end up in situations and you're like, "Well, shit, here I am. Can't get out. Guess the boat's sinking." On this date in 2006, Nintendo released the Wii.
Wii! Yay! I never got into the Wii. My kids didn't ever really got into the Wii too much. It,
don't really care.
Nah.
It was just a thing. All right, notable births. 1933, Larry King. 1936, Dick Cavett. If you watch old TV,
yeah,
he's got that distinctive voice.
Yep.
1938, he colorized all the old classics, Ted Turner. He married Jane
Among Fonda so many too. Other things, yeah. Turner Network used to be huge when I was a kid. I remember as a child, the only baseball games we'd watch would TBS would have that Atlanta Braves.
Yeah.
They were America's baseball team pretty much because he broadcast those everywhere.
Uh-huh. 1942, Calvin Klein. It says it right there in your underwear. 1961, Meg Ryan.
Cutie.
And 1983, Kylo Ren, Adam Driver.
Yep.
I said it was interesting. 1703. He's listed in Wikipedia, the man in the iron mask.
Based on a true story.
Nobody knows who he actually was, so his name has to be hyperlinked, or his who he's known as. And on this date in 2017, Charles Manson. These things happen.
We just talked about him last episode.
Last week was his birthday. Yeah. This week was his death date. Good riddance. Hippie piece of shit.
Yep. Psychopath to the extreme. The definition of psychopath.
So that is it for old business. Let's take a break and we'll come back for some of the new.
There he is. What a happening dude. They're a super party animal. Yeah. His name is Bugs McKenzie. A barbecue inside. A barbecue. And a cold Bud Light. A cold Bud Light. Puts him in a party frenzy. In a party frenzy.
He's Bugs McKenzie. Bud Light's original party animal.
Ghostbuzz go. Ghostbuzz go.
Ghostbuzz go.
But you're really cooking
now. All right. Hey, Mom! Howdy. I'm gonna separate your head from your shoulders.
Do it. Bad.
All right.
The time's wrong.
No!
He might as well just kill me then, too.
Caleb Colton no longer belongs to our world.
We give him a week, see if we can call him one of us.
He belongs to hers.
But you have to learn to kill.
He belongs to theirs.
I don't want to kill.
He makes you kill tonight.
And they all belong to the night.
It's $3 short for a bus to get home. You help me out?
What are you on?
Believe me, I told you.
Don't think of it as killing.
Evening.
Don't think at all. It's just something that you do night after night. It's only ever a question of how.
Nervous? I would be too if I were you. Near Dark.
It'll be your boys falling in the control.
Check out time.
Yourself some time, son.
Like damn, this is my family. Let it go.
Near Dark. Pray for daylight. The night has its price.
We're back.
Yes, we are.
New business is new business, and this is new business.
Okay. Thank you, Gomez, for that introduction. We'll get right into it. Dateline Potter, Nebraska.
Didn't you talk about Nebraska last week?
Yes, I did. This is a new Nebraska story.
It's good enough for some. What's their new slogan?
God, I don't not remember it, but not for everybody. Okay. In a high school in Potter, Nebraska, a whole bunch of kids got sick and after eating lunch in a junior high school. And they think it may have something to do after they consumed chili containing kangaroo meat. Did you know there was such a thing as, you know, kangaroo meat floating around there in the United States? Legal kangaroo meat?
Not normally.
Yes.
I know they eat the hell out of it in Australia.
The school's head cook.
But it's closer, so it's fresher.
Yeah. The school's head cook, Kevin Fry, said he added kangaroo meat for its nutritional value and because it's a lean cut. So it was a mix of, just like you do venison chili, where it's a mix of beef and venison. He did a marsupial chili with a mix of kangaroo and beef.
It was served with extra pouch.
It's unknown the extent of the illnesses and whether or not they were brought on by the mill, but it's, you know, maybe more than coincidence, and they've had several complaints from parents since it's been revealed that Mr. Fry was putting kangaroo meat in the chili. I've never heard of kangaroo meat being used for consumption in the United States, but
I don't know about
apparently
the,
Cisco, the food distributor, is bringing kangaroo meat.
I don't know about the
public.
U.S. I know they're an invasive species in Australia.
Yeah.
And because they killed off all their natural predators. So, like, I don't know if there's even a season on them anymore. Like, they're so bad in Australia that you can just shoot them and...
They'll let them enter the UFC and it'll be fun.
But, right. But... That's one of those things that's bizarre. It's like, how much pouch is in your kangaroo pie?
Okay, we haven't heard a lot about it because currently it's in post-production right now, but Three from Hell, as you know, the Rob Zombie film, is scheduled for release next year. As we know from we've talked about before on the show, House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil Rejects, they're very different films. When you look at them, one... As is described in this article, House of a Thousand Corpses plays out like a comic book adventures of the Firefly family, while the other is much more grounded in reality vision of the characters and their dirty deeds. You know, it goes a lot into the characters' background, makes them empathetic characters towards the end. Rob Zombie has said in a recent interview with Metal Hammer's Horror Issue, second was so different from the first one, I wanted the third one to be different yet again. So we can expect an even vastly different movie than the first two, with the release of Three from Hell. So once again, that's been scheduled for release next year. We don't have an exact date yet, but we'll see. As he put it, if you're just retreading the same movie for profit, then it's a bummer. He wants a totally different experience for this next movie. So I'm still looking forward to the Three from Hell movie. I really, really enjoyed the Devil's Rejects. I thought it was a great movie. It was vastly superior to House of a Thousand Corpses. So yeah, that's going to be a good one.
So... Talking Rob Zombie, have you seen Halloween yet?
No.
It's weird to read the online reviews of Halloween. It really, really is. And if you haven't seen it, I'm not going to spoil it. I mean, we're far enough out that anybody listening to us right now should, but when we're recording it, it's still fresh. So I'm not going to, but I posted a thing on Twitter, I think yesterday, I don't know if you saw it, where it's like, there's all these discussion groups. They're talking about, what do you like in, what's your favorite kind of horror? Like, what do you like in horror movies? And people will be like, I don't like mindless killers, and I don't like jump scares. I want to think. I want something that has a purpose or a reason. And in the same breath, they'll be like, but Halloween 1978 is the best horror movie that's ever been made.
It's a mindless killer.
It's a mindless killer, and it's made of nothing but jump scares. It's music and light.
Well, we've talked about the variances of horror right within the genre itself, and how you can enjoy something from every one of them. You know, it's...
Right, and we try not to be... I guess we try not to be snooty, because if it's scary, it's scary. And I don't care if it's scary because it's a big monster stomping on you, or if it's a virus, a little tiny monster biting you. I don't care if it's a mindless killer or, you know, it's like I said in the response to one of them. It was like, okay, you got Hannibal Lecter. He's very super intelligent. Is he scary because he's smart, or is he scary because he eats people? You've also got Leatherface, who's dumb as a rock. Is he scary because he's dumb, or is he scary because he'll eat you?
Yeah.
The cannibalism is the fear factor here. It's like you can elevate a cannibal to Lecter status. It doesn't make him more scary than Leatherface. They're still pivoting on that same fear factor, right? The new Halloween movie, again, not spoiling it for, they dialed back all of the, basically you had Halloween 1, the first Halloween. He wasn't even Michael. He was the shape. He wasn't named. Like, he had him named, but they didn't use it in the movie. And what was he doing, and why was he doing it? Nobody knew.
Right.
Through however many sequels, through 40 years of sequels, they've tried to build it into sibling rivalry, Devil's Curse, Celtic Witch's Curse, all this other stuff. The new movie strips all of that away and goes right back to
the roots.
Nothing. Fucker's brain is wired wrong and he just kills because he does. And it's awesome. And that is not even spoiler free. That's like that. That's not a spoiler. That's not spoiler free. That's just the movie. And it's great because of all that. There's no conjecture. Why is he doing what he does? Who gives a fuck? He killed four people for no damn reason. In the 70s, right? He killed a bunch of people for no reason. That's not good.
Right. You know what I found most interesting? The most interesting article I saw.
Article?
You know, the oddest article that I've seen regarding the Halloween movie is people are claiming that it is a venue or vehicle for the right-wing take on gun control. I actually saw an article about how it has a right-wing slant.
That's bullshit.
It's so scary because she has all these weapons that she's ready to take on. She's prepared herself for bike. It's just, that's the weirdest thing that I've seen. But needless to say, that being said, it is a huge movie. It has had a huge reception. And it is going to do remarkably well.
It's done remarkably well.
Yes, but it is going to continue to just snowball. And
as far as...
We don't have to go into
that. No. I understand what you're saying. There's a scene in the movie where he's on his way, and she opens up her vault, and she hands a gun to her daughter, who doesn't want one, or to her granddaughter, who doesn't want one, and she says, here, use a revolver, they don't jam. Okay, that's knowledge. But she's also using... like lever action, like old school bolt action, and
she's like, the rifleman.
She's the rifleman. And if she'd been preparing for this whole time, she would have
an AR-15.
She would have a much more tactical firepower, and you know, just be prepared because you don't want to have to like cycle a bolt through a guy who you shoot him in the head and he doesn't stop. You want to be able to just like, so no, it can't be. In fact, it was kind of ridiculous to a gun person.
just so you know, just on that topic, this is one of my weird segues. You know, the Mega Millions was recently, you know, $1.6 billion, and I actually bought one ticket. I bought one Quick Pick. Just, you know, what the hell? This life changing money. And I was thinking, I'm driving, I'm like, you know, if I win the Mega Millions, I'm going to buy a real big piece of property with a house. And the first thing I'm going to buy is a flamethrower, because that would be so much fun to set up bales of hay with a flamethrower, invite my friends over, let's go burn some shit up.
Yeah.
A flamethrower would be so much fun. Dude, that's just a weird thing. And for some reason, I was like, I'm going to get a fucking flamethrower.
I had the same kind of idea.
Yeah, flamethrower and AR-15 with a bunch of Tannerite. And me and my buddies are going to have fun this weekend.
So I read this thing today. The Mega Millions jackpot was $1.6 billion. For the people with problems with big numbers, $1.6 billion is $1,600 million. $1,600 million. If you took the cash option,
it was 900 plus.
And after the 37% tax for whatever state you're in, and then like all of the stuff, it ended up, if you won the jackpot cash option, it was $497 million, which is
right.
Not a little bit of money.
It's life-changing money.
But $497 million is almost... In fact, it's more than $1 billion less than $1.6 billion. So, $500 million instead of 1,600 million.
I'm curious. Does that tax...
So that you win the lottery and you immediately lose $1 billion in taxes.
Now, okay, the winner was in South Carolina. Okay. Does that $1.2 billion go to only South Carolina, or is it divided between the states?
Whichever state you win it in.
That's who gets all the money.
That's the tax you pay on it. So, but so it's
South Carolina's got over $1 billion richer.
Yes.
What do you think they're going to do with that money?
Hookers and
blow. They need to rebuild from the damn storm. But
yeah, hookers and blow, mostly. They'll put it in the general fund, and it'll mostly go to politicians' hookers.
Okay, I got to turn
That's
this
That's why we don't talk about politics here.
I know. Because our take on it would offend many people. Okay, Predator is coming out for release in China, and they've released some new posters, and you can find these from our friends Bloody Disgusting on their website. But these posters are money. The Chinese are crazy folks. And these are some of the posters they put together for the Predator release. And you got to look at some of these. There he is. Looks like he's doing a little bit of break dancing.
This codpiece.
And you see Predator over here. He's doing some DJ work behind the computer. And here, he's apparently playing for the L.A. Lakers basketball team. And this last one,
Back to the Future.
Doing. Yeah, he's back for to the Future Kid. But yeah, these posters are pretty money, dude. I'd love to have copies of these.
That's
man.
Pretty
these
awesome.
Are pretty awesome.
I was at Pop Culture earlier today. There was an Empire Strikes Back poster that was signed up by almost everybody except for it didn't have Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill,
wow.
or C-3PO.
Hamill's one you can get.
It had the guy from had Boba Fett, had Lando, it had R2-D2, Kenny Baker. Which Boba Fett's passed away.
Yeah.
Kenny Baker's passed away. Admiral Akbar's passed away. But it was like a whole bunch of signatures on this Empire Strikes fold-out poster. I was like...
That's pretty awesome.
That was awesome.
Okay. Disney World, Big Secret has recently been released. You've been to Disney World. I've never been to any Disney theme park, so... Okay, apparently... There are code words that are used to distinguish different... requirements of the cleaning crew. One is a code V, which means someone threw up. You know, so code V by Magic Mountain means go clean up some vomit over by Magic Mountain. Code U means urine. Code U, Magic Mountain, somebody, you know, peed. If you ever hear a call for HEPA cleanup, this is how common this happens. They actually have a code for it. It means that once again, a park guest has scattered the cremated ashes of a loved one somewhere in the park.
I knew that.
And a HEPA filter is needed to go and clean it up. At least once a month, custodians say someone scatters the ashes of dead relatives at one of the Disney theme parks.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's a huge place for people to scatter the remains of their loved ones, which is pretty
crazy.
Because
that's where they were the happiest in their life. It shouldn't be that weird. People do it at, it's like, scatter. He loved to fish.
Yeah.
Go scatter his ashes over the bay.
Right.
Like he loved Disney World. Go scatter his ashes at Disney World.
And even one of the...
But then people are just going to end up vacuumed. Like in Ghostbusters.
They interviewed a lady, Jody Jackson Wells, a business coach from Boca Raton, Florida. In 2009, she smuggled in a pill bottle full of ashes of her dearly departed mother. Once inside, she helped spread the ashes on the platform of It's a Small World near her head-spinning bird. Later in the day, overcome her grief, Miss Wells hopped over the barricades surrounding the lawn outside Cinderella's castle and ran across the grass, flinging them as she crossed over. She says, I had two fistfuls of the ashes and I literally leapt like I was a dancer, she said. Yeah, so apparently it's a real common thing for ashes to get scattered amongst the patrons of...
My thing is, you can do a lot of discreet stuff. It's like, ooh, I want to scatter my beloved, my ashes. Like, you got a pill bottle full of ashes. Disney World is something like 1,000,000 acres.
Yeah.
Like, you could drop a pinch here. You could drop a pinch there.
Yeah. In this line, in this line.
Like, drop a little into there. Like, you can do a lot of ash dropping. You go out like some kind of psycho ballerina. Yeah, they're going to wonder what you're doing. And then go security cam your ass and then hit it up with a vacuum. And then your mom's going to end up stuck in a Hoover or a Dyson. That's not good.
Okay, so I recently missed a couple of new reviews we had on iTunes that I thought I'd get into and read. Both of them 5-star reviews, which is very exciting.
It's always good.
The first one is titled "More Fun Than a Barrel of Decapitated Heads," from Lance from Texas, is his name. Discovered this podcast earlier this year and have been listening to every show. This is not your standard paint-by-numbers podcast. The guys have great chemistry, which we talk about all the time. And you can tell they have a lot of fun doing it. The old stuff and new stuff segments are at the beginning are unlike anything else out there, which is pretty cool. I guess those segues have nothing to do with that. Give this a listen, and you too will want to subscribe and hear every show. So thank you, Lance from Texas.
Hell yeah.
The second one, I don't know how to pronounce this. I'm going to spell it out. Lysemh. Another 5-star review. Being a 90s baby, I love getting my horror education. I grew up watching all the classic horror movies, though I probably shouldn't have at such a young age, which you and I have talked about many times. And I really like getting the background information and history. This podcast is really great horror. And these guys do a great job giving me useless knowledge that I like to have. You're very welcome. Children of Horror for Life.
It's so much fun to look this stuff up. It's like scrolling through old and new business. It's like, oh my God. And it's the thing about the day in history. Like, on this date in history, some shit happened. Sometimes it's some you know, penny ante shit. Sometimes it's some ultra shit.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes some shit happened. You're like, oh my God.
And one more thing I wanted to give a shout out to is there's an app that I discovered by listening to one of my sports podcasts I listen to, View from the Cheap Seats with the Sklar Brothers. It's called Murder Minute. And Murder Minute, it gives you a daily story about a serial killer from the United States. And it's pretty cool the way it's set up. The way it is you go ahead, you go on it in the morning, you have your new story, and it gives you the information as though you're having a text conversation with someone. And today's episode just happened to be about Ed Gein. So every day it's a new historical background on some type of murder. It's pretty cool. There's actually a couple that I had never heard of before that I've seen on there already. So
nice.
Murder Minute app. On iTunes or your favorite app store. Check it out. Free app. And you can get your daily dose of horror, murder, real life, true crime information. So,
sweet.
For lovers of true crime, it's definitely an app you want to check out. And that's it for me.
All right. We'll check out for a minute and we'll check back in.
What's its face? Whatchamacallit? Whatever it is, whatever it was. Chocolatey chocolate. Whatchamacallit? How's it go? Wowzamadoo. Chewgooey caramel. Whatchamacallit? Doohickeys. You know what I mean. Peanutty crispies. Chewy, chocolatey, crunchy, ashy. Do that. Let's get a Marie. More than a mouthful. It's whatchamacallit? Whatchamacallit?
Oh-wee, the circus! Here I will go cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs with its yummy chocolatey taste. It's a luscious part of a good breakfast.
And now the great flying Sonny-no!
I should have been a clown.
Sonny!
Trapped by the trapeze!
Want some puff-puff Cocoa Puffs? Munchy crunchy Cocoa Puffs? Yummy chocolatey Cocoa Puffs!
Yahoo! I'm cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs! I get a bang out of them!
All right, so how do you want to do this? Do you want to go from the least important to the more important, or do you want to go the other way? Or do you want to go random?
I like random. Random's always fun.
Police Academy 4 came out in 1987.
I can't. 4 was when they went to Europe, wasn't it?
Police Academy?
Yeah.
That was Citizens on Patrol.
No, Citizens on Patrol was 2.
No, it was part 4.
It was part 4 with Citizens on Patrol? Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember what part 2 or part 3 was about, but part 4 was Citizens on Patrol.
Okay. See, I thought 2 was the one that introduced Bobcat Goldthwait, and that was Citizens on Patrol, I thought. But I may be mistaken. I don't know. I love Police Academy movies.
I remember part 4 being hilarious, where, like, Bobcat's,
They introduced a lot of people to Bobcat.
So I think, like, he was a cop in this one. In the third one, he was a trainee.
Yes. Yeah.
So
yes, two he was introduced. Three he was a trainee, and four he was actually a cop. Yes, I recall that.
But yeah, Beverly Hills. Let's see. Beverly Hills Cop Part 2 came out.
Which was an excellent movie. 3 had a totally different director and writer, so that one kind of went downhill. But yeah, 2 was awesome, dude.
It was
2 had Bridget Nielsen. Nice.
So, let's see. What else came out that year?
Pre-Flava Flav Bridget Nielsen.
that was a Stallone.
Yeah.
Bridget Nielsen.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else came out that year?
There's some big ones on there, dude. Good Lord. Let's go Dragnet, which we actually enjoyed that movie.
Dude, that movie was so much fun.
Tom Hanks used to be such a good comedic. Well, he probably still is, but, you know, he primarily did comedic films back in the day. And Dragnet was fucking awesome.
Well, when you had Tom Hanks, let's not mince words. When you have Tom Hanks against Dan Aykroyd, as Dan Aykroyd's the straight man, and Hanks is the goofball.
Right.
Which, if you know anything about Dan Aykroyd, he's kind of always the middle man. He's goofy as hell, but he looks like a straight.
Yeah.
But as Joe Friday, he was just so, like, down the line. And I always remember that scene where they bust into the milk factory with the tank because they got the bad tip. And they come busting through and they smash the milk factory and they get out and Tom Hanks is like, it's like some kind of drug. Like, what is it? It tastes kind of wholesome. He's like, it's milk. It's fresh, like sweet, refreshing milk, just like it said on the sign on the store before you obliterated it. Like, one of the funniest scenes ever.
It's like, he was awesome in that movie.
Tom Hanks and Dan Aykroyd. Such a good movie. He's like, Dan Aykroyd's like figuring stuff out. It's like P-A-G-A-N. Pagan. It's like, man, you really figured that out. It says it right there on the paper. It's like, not even. All right. Do we want to get serious? Oh, Summer School. Summer School was
Two horror fans of that movie. That was a great movie.
That was the movie that made non-horror fans want to be horror fans. And I was one of those, because I remember I was 11 at the time this came out. Like, I couldn't handle horror movies.
Why are these guys so obsessed with horror?
Like, I couldn't handle horror movies because they were too damn scary. Like, I'd be scared at night. I'd get night terrors and stuff. These guys in Summer School made me, like, reevaluate my position, because they were like, I wanted to be them.
Right.
Because they had so much fun, like, recreating the monsters and with the posters on the wall and all the fun stuff. Like, I think it was Summer School that made me, like,
that was really a cool movie.
Kind of flip the switch on a horror movie, because I was like, wait, there's something to this. And it's fun to be in on the joke and part of the scare. If you're the one being scared, you're not quite getting it. So you need to change your position. All right, Revenge of the Nerds 2, that kind of...
It wasn't the worst. It wasn't as good as the first one, but it was still a fun ride. It's where Hotel Oral Sex.
All right, let's see. House 2, which was actually, I think, superior to the first one.
Yeah,
The second one was really good.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
And let's see, where are we with our sequels? Did we already knock off our sequels? Oh, no.
Oh, we got one huge sequel on there.
Evil Dead 2.
Not really a sequel, more like a reboot, but it was, it's just a...
Genre-changing
yes.
film.
Which we've done whole episodes on.
But yeah, so we talked about the whole Evil Dead series not too very long ago. You know what's weird? In 2 years of talking about shit, every now and then I'll be like, we talked about that not too long ago. But then whenever I was pulling the archives for our anniversary show, I'm like, it says not too long ago. that was like weeks or months or multiple months.
We could always
or...
revisit our serial killer episodes, our cult episodes. There's a lot of episodes we could revisit to freshen up new viewers and new listeners.
But it is so crazy since our fresh eyes on Evil Dead, how much Evil Dead stuff has popped up. Just like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw the day somebody was talking about the Halloween... Ash vs. Evil Dead comic book is going to feature essentially a crossover of Evil Dead and Bubba Hotep.
Nice.
We thought it'd be interesting.
Alrighty, let's get into... Well, no, we're still in sequels.
Okay, we still got sequels to do. Okay.
Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3.
Probably the... What many consider the premier...
The best of the series.
The best of the series, yep.
Part 1 was dark... Part 2 was darker, but didn't make any sense.
Right.
Part 3 actually brought Freddy and made Freddy who he was. It was kind of like Jason getting his mask.
It's like I tell people all the time, Part 3 was so good, it made Part 4...
Possible.
It made Part 4 the most profitable...
Yeah.
One of the series. Even though it was nowhere near the best of the series.
So I remember my cousins, my aunt and uncle and cousins lived in the other neighborhood. So living in Portland, it would essentially have been about like maybe 600 or 800 yards. But outside of our, you know, like went out of our neighborhood, across the street, across a drainage ditch, then into the other neighborhood and then over, and that's where they lived. So it seemed far away, even though walking was like maybe, it was maybe like a 4-minute walk at best, with 11-year-old legs. You know? My cousin was like 2 or 3 years older than me. So if I was 11, that made him 13, 14 years old. I remember going over to his house and him being like, you know, oh, we stayed up and watched Nightmare on Elm Street and it scared me so bad. Like he was terrified. I knew, I was like, man, I'm like, I already knew that that was going to just mess up my brain. So I didn't touch it. I didn't even want to get close to it. And then later when I actually saw it, I was like, that shit ain't scary. That was one thing about Nightmare on Elm Street. Nightmare never scared me. Friday the 13th did.
Right.
Halloween, totally.
But Nightmare on Elm Street were good movies because the antagonist had such charisma.
Right.
Robert Englund made that franchise.
But I never felt that they were scary. No. Like, I was never scared.
They weren't overly scary. No.
Freddy himself was kind of gross, but...
But just his overall charisma and personality was made that franchise successful. He has good kills, too. Classic kills.
Definitely. All right, let's get into some mainstream releases. Not all of these are horror, but all of them are big. Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon is a huge franchise, dude. It was a fun franchise. It introduced a lot of people to Mel Gibson.
Buddy cop movie. The first one is dark as hell.
Yeah.
Meg and I watched it not too long ago.
Well, there was recently, this past weekend, there was a Lethal Weapon marathon on there.
But that first one is brutally dark.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, really is. I mean, it starts off with a junkie hooker porn star
jumping out of a window. Right.
And half, you know, another half of the movie is Mel Gibson staring at himself in the mirror as he's going to put a bullet in his own head.
Yeah.
Like, it's really rough.
It goes deep into the psyche of the Mel Gibson character from that movie. But it's a great franchise, man. The Lethal Weapon movies are great. Awesome.
Lethal Weapon is just killer. Raising Arizona.
Nicolas Cage.
I'll take these Huggies and whatever cash you got in the register.
John Goodman, Nicolas Cage. That was a great, great movie, man.
That was Holly Hunter, too.
Uh-huh.
That, back whenever I was, right before I met my wife, I was quite unemployed. You're talking about that little TV in the back. My sister had this little TV VCR combo in her bedroom at the Park Street house, our little haunted house that we lived in.
Yep.
And I don't know what happened. We had to call the landlord, and something happened, and it shut down the power in the living room. So her bedroom was the only one that had a TV in it. and we'd sit there, we'd get wasted, like, and this was weird. It was a weird sort of law of attraction, because we had nothing. We had no money. Half of our apartment didn't work. We had no food. We had no booze. And we had like a 17-inch TV or 15-inch TV screen attached to a VCR. In like, this was like in 2003. So it wasn't like that. Like, this is where we're at. And fucking A, if we didn't have a crowd of people around us sitting there watching this little tiny TV and watching Raising Arizona and Office Space on infinite repeat on this fucking little ass TV. And I'm like, Carrie and I would both just be like, dude, why can't we go to your house? Like, you gotta.
It's cool to hang out here.
You got. And then, like, my roommate had burnt out on me, so then we lost power completely, so we didn't even have that TV. But we're sitting in this room with candles. Candles. And an acoustic guitar, because that's. I couldn't plug in my electric. Yeah. Just sitting there fucking playing acoustic guitar with candles. Do you want to hang out or something? Yeah, what you want to do? Oh, I just came over here. Like, damn it. All right. Did you at least bring a six-pack or something? Because we still got people sleeping on our hammock outside while we're practically homeless. But yeah, come on in. Like, good times. Good times. Raising Arizona. Those were the days right there. Remember the gate?
Yes.
The kids that move a piece of plywood in their backyard and it's a gateway to hell.
Yes, I do remember that.
That was a scary-ass movie for an 11-year-old.
No, I'm not going to imagine.
Saw this one in the theater. Harry and the Hendersons.
Great movie. I was talking about that the other day with somebody. Harry and the Hendersons is awesome. You know, the Bigfoot monster in that movie, the special effects of that were so awesome. The costume was so good.
And Stan Winston.
What's interesting is the person that played Harry was also in the next movie in costume also. It was the same gentleman.
John Matuzak.
No, it wasn't. It was, I can't remember his name. It's a black guy. He was also, remember Big Top Pee Wee? Mm-hmm. Remember the big, tall black guy? He was the guy that played Harry, and he also played the Predator.
I thought Harry and the Hendersons, it was John Matuzak.
No, it wasn't John Matuzak.
I thought there was a tribute at the end because he died.
No, I don't think so. I'll double check that. But
might want to look that up.
Yeah, let me double check that real quick.
Because I know there's a really tall guy that was in different movies. He was certainly in The Predator. But Harry and the Hendersons, he was a former football player, and he died.
I know who John Matuzak is, but I don't think he... like I said, I'm going to double check that one. But yeah, Harry and John Lithgow. What was cool is, you know, John Lithgow is a great comedic actor. He's a great dramatic actor. And in that movie, his range was shown throughout it because he was so passionate about protecting Harry. That dramatic part of it really, really came out when he was arguing with his dad.
Yeah, John Lithgow.
No, Harry was Kevin Peterson. It was Kevin the same Peterson. Guy. Yeah, it was the same guy from Big Top Pee Wee and also from Predator.
All right, well then I was wrong. This is my mea culpa. I apologize.
I'm sorry, Kevin Peter Hall.
Kevin Peter Hall.
Yes.
All right.
And what's funny is, you know where he ended up, just a little side note, this is terrible, but a friend of mine was in Dallas, a good friend of mine, Ryan Ezell, several years ago. I don't remember exactly when it was, but it was a while back. But he was at a nightclub in Dallas, and this big, tall black guy is bouncing there. It's him. The actor from Harry and the Hendersons and also Predator was just a giant bouncer at a nightclub. And this was probably 2010.
Wow.
2009. And yeah, he's a huge dude, man. Like, you remember from Big Top Pee Wee. You could really tell how tall he was in that movie. But yeah, he was in both movies.
All right, so we looked it up, and I was wrong. John Matuszak was Sloth in Goonies.
Yeah.
It was Kevin Peter Hall. It was Harry Henderson.
Yeah, Harry Henderson's in Predator.
All right. So Harry Henderson's 1987. Predator. 1987.
Huge movie.
Dude. When I say that I was scared of horror movies, I think ultimately I was scared of slashers. I was scared of Jason and Norman Bates and Michael Myers. So I watched the shit out of some Predator.
Like, such a fun, awesome movie. It's an action movie. It's not a horror movie at all, but it's badass, dude.
Well,
the Predator character, just the special effects in that movie with the costume and the makeup and everything, it just, all the elements of the Predator, the clicking noise that he would make,
the infrared,
being able to mimic sounds, he's an awesome villain, dude.
And when you say it's not a horror movie, it really kind of is. It's an action movie, but it's a slow burn action.
Yeah.
Because there's bursts of action.
Yeah.
The difference between Predator and any other slasher is that the victims are armed. And they're kind of there, but they're out of their element.
Yeah, they can't fight back. They don't understand what they're fighting against.
Right.
When Jesse the Body Ventura mows down that jungle with that gun, he doesn't realize he's not even shooting at the Predator. Predator's up high, just watching him.
Well, that was after Jesse got killed.
Yeah, that was his buddy that did it.
That was Mac.
Mac
mowed down the jungle. He hit him. He bled a little bit, but he was up in the trees.
Yeah.
But I read something that said that a Batman movie told from the criminal's perspective would be a lot like Predator. Because he'd just be up there and quiet, and you'd just be like... But yeah, Hawkins with his jokes about the I need a little pussy!
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, as a kid, you're just like, I don't get it. But Predator was awesome. Predator is still awesome. It's not dated. Like,
no, it's a good movie. It stands up today.
Even with current CGI, the way that they did the effects on the invisibility and stuff, it still works.
Yeah.
And
look at the franchise that it launched. Going with the continuation of the Predator movies and then the Aliens versus Predators.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
The first original, the best.
Oh, by far.
Dutch and Dylan. Dylan, you son of a bitch. All right. This one's got Cher in it, but we'll forgive it because it's got Michelle Pfeiffer and Jack Nicholson in it. With the Witches of Eastwick.
Never really got into that movie.
It's a good movie. It was a game changer as far as like mainstream horror, though.
Yeah.
Because it was pretty severe.
Yeah.
To have all of these A-list actors doing a horror movie was pretty good.
Yeah. The next one you're about to announce.
And you realize that at the time, 1987, Jack Nicholson playing the devil, not too far removed from 1981 with The Shining.
Yeah.
So
Nicholson's a tremendous actor.
You just think about that. We're in 2018. So, like, 2013, 2012, if a movie like that significant of a movie had just come out like not that long ago,
mm-hmm.
which was Eastwood, was a big deal.
Yeah.
So, probably one of my favorite movies.
By far. One, Mel Brooks is a comedic genius. The movies that he made and just... He was... It's amazing the stuff Mel Brooks come up with.
And what's weird is that he's kind of like Weird Al. He didn't do other stuff. He just made parodies. He just lampooned the stuff that was already there. And in some of the battle scenes in Spaceballs were almost better than a lot of the stuff he was making fun of. But Spaceballs. What was your impression of Spaceballs?
It's a great movie. It's incredible, dude. And it's another timeless one that people can still enjoy today the first time they've seen it. Remember my son saw Spaceballs when he went to spend the night at a friend's house when he was in elementary school. So he was probably fifth, sixth grade at the most. And he just thought that was one of the best movies he had ever seen in his life.
Spaceballs.
That's how timeless it is.
Spaceballs is so great. The bad guys are so bad.
Comb the desert. We ain't found shit.
That kind of stuff. Rick Moranis, which I have to pause and we do the Fresh Eyes, right? And we haven't done a Fresh Eyes on Ghostbusters, but I have just recently watched Ghostbusters. And I've seen Ghostbusters at least a couple dozen times. At least. Ghostbusters is one of those stalwart classics that'll just always be around and you'll always watch it. And 9 out of 10 times, you're watching either Ray or you're watching Peter. And if you're a horny teenage boy, you're watching Dana.
Yeah.
Lewis, Rick Moranis' character. Every time he pops on the screen, you sympathetically laugh at the nerd. You're just kind of like...
He steals the show.
You're like, there he is. He's her neighbor. But oh my God, the chops. Just the comedic and acting chops it took to be that guy. Because he steals every scene he's in.
Yes, he does.
He never stops talking. When he's himself. When he's
introducing people at the party, is just.
he never. And as soon as the demon dog possesses him, he still doesn't stop talking. He's just like, oh, when Gozer came down from whatever, he's like, that was a day, I'll tell you what. He just completely rips through this entire history of demon dominating nether realms. And he's just kind of like, what's that? And he's just like, blah, blah, blah. How you could even be in the same room with that guy and not just fall down laughing. Like,
I've never seen a Rick Moranis movie that I haven't liked.
I've always loved him, but
even in My Blue Heaven, I love that movie. He's Rick Moranis is awesome.
Somebody posted the other day, and I shared it. The old Strange Brew, where like
I've watched that movie so I got the DVD at home. I watch it every once in a while.
It's kind of like the I guess it was the inspiration for the movie. It's like the skit from SCTV. Yeah. We're like, oh, somebody put a mouse in a... Or, no, somebody found a mouse in a bottle. And they got a case of free beer. So we're figuring out how to put mouses in bottles.
They feed it. They put it as a baby, and they feed it until it grows up.
Well, they're trying to figure that out. Like, he's explaining that that's how you do it. And Rick Moranis is trying to figure out how many 12 cases of beer is. He's like, if each case has 12 beers, then 12 cases is 12, and that's 12, and that's 204. And the other guy's like, no, you feed the mouse. It is the funniest thing in the world. Okay, this is going to be part 4 if we don't hurry through
these movies. I know, man. I'm sorry. But these movies have so much meaning to us, man.
1987 gave birth to Full Metal Jacket.
Another incredible, incredible film.
That introduced us to Gunny, God rest his soul.
Yes.
That scared the fuck out of me, kept me out of the military. I don't care about Platoon. You can't... No, it wasn't Oliver Stone. It was...
Full Metal Jacket.
Full Metal Jacket. The barrel kicking, the bullshit, I can't hear
you. That movie brings you through so many emotions within that movie. From fear to stuff you can laugh at to just... It's heartbreaking. It's a great, great film, dude.
That opening scene should be shown in every school. Not to scare people off the military, but just show people like what... Okay, you've got such soft skin that you can't deal with a microaggression. Look at this, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Just look at this. You can't jump a hurdle, so they're just going to beat the fuck out of you with soap. Like, this is just what you get. My grandfather told me some stories that will fucking curl your toes, man. He's a Marine. They didn't fuck with shit.
Right.
Probably still don't. They just don't let it be aired.
Okay, this next film launched a dance craze, a video game, and it is just... It is sewn into the fabric of America. If you don't know this movie, then something is wrong with you.
And nobody realized that it was satire either.
I buy that for a dollar.
The SUX 1000. RoboCop. RoboCop. The movie of movies. That was a huge one right there.
Oh, yeah. I don't think they realized how big of an impact RoboCop was going to have when they made it.
The people who were, like, in fact, whenever I have it in my head, the character played by Miguel Ferrer,
yes,
the designer, the guy.
Yeah, the guy that got shot in the legs and they blew him up.
Yeah. Where he's worried about the marketing of RoboCop. Like, oh, you know, take that other arm off. It doesn't look symmetrical, like, whatever. He's the guy that I think is the person who's like, oh, let's make toys. It's like, dude, you're soulless. You remember that one time that RoboCop shot that guy in the dick? RoboCop is an ultra-violent movie.
Oh, yeah.
That has nothing good in store. But strangely enough, RoboCop's Detroit is not as bad as our Detroit.
No. It still had some hope left.
It had a little bit.
Oh, and also, Nancy Allen, in that movie, she has a horror connection also. Do you remember what it was? You probably haven't seen it in a long time, but she was the aunt, the step-aunt, in Poltergeist 3. The one where they're in the multi-million-dollar building and everything, and all the mirrors.
Okay.
Yeah, she was in that movie also.
Moving horror.
Oh my God.
Fatal Attraction. Michael Douglas. Glenn Close.
Yes.
That boiled rabbit.
Bitches be crazy, as they say.
Little debut for Fred Savage, The Princess Bride.
Great movie.
Another big... God,
just so many classic movies here, man.
In 1987, dude. A big... like the rodents of unusual sizes.
Yes.
Princess Buttercup. Who didn't have a crush on her? And then find out she married Sean Penn. And you're like, dude.
And then you got to see Andre the Giant's acting chops in that one also. That was a great movie, man.
Andre the Giant.
Five-fingered man.
The six-fingered man.
Six-fingered
man.
But
oh. the what was it? What's the brimstone?
Inconceivable.
That dude. The Sicilian. You keep using that term.
I don't think you know what that means.
What was the name of the cloak? It was the Infinity Cloak, or was the... where he's like, we could storm the castle, but if we only had the burning cloak.
Yes.
And Andre the Giant, I'm the Dread Pirate Roberts.
You'll all meet your doom.
He meet your doom. I'm here for your soul. Everybody like runs away. It's so good. And you know that Rob Reiner is like, okay, we could probably cut and like replay this, but that's about perfect.
It's perfect.
It's so perfect.
Well, let's set him on fire.
All right, then we had Throw Mama from the Train.
Another just incredible movie, man. You don't know how much... Owen! Owen! Owen doesn't have any friends. You know, it's funny. You see her. I can't remember her name right now, but, you know, by the time she did Throw Mama from the Train, she suffered from cancer, and they cut off part of her tongue, which is why she spoke like that. But she was in Every Which Way But Loose. Before that happened, she was actually a good actress,
Goonies.
Man. Yeah, she was in a ton of movies, man.
She was in... Oh, yeah. This is probably an early episode. MeTV plays the old Wonder Woman series. She was on that. She was a villain in the old Wonder Woman series.
She's a great actress.
In the first couple seasons. She's young, but she's recognizable, and she still has kind of the short bobbed haircut.
That movie is so Throw My Arm from a Train is just it's such a great movie. Everyone should see that at least once.
The night was moist. Yeah. And the night was sultry. He's like, I'm gonna kill her.
She hits him in the head with that frying pan.
She's like, just finds the perfect word for him, and he's just like, he's been looking for it for months. Sanjay.
Peanuts make me choke.
All right, let's give a little bit of a nod to Charlie Sheen. Michael Douglas was busy this month.
Yeah.
This year in Wall Street.
Michael Douglas is huge back in the day.
Dude. Oh, dude, he was. We had Good Morning Vietnam.
That was there too. Oh, Robin Williams.
Saw that one in the theater with my folks. Okay. Old Robin Williams, man. 100% manic. Like, it's amazing that dude ever stopped doing cocaine.
You know, to this day, my favorite movie of his, which I only get to see every once in a while, is World According to Garp. That movie is just... I saw that when I was young. It was one of those movies that came on, like, the Movie Channel, Showtime, or something like that. And when I was a kid, that movie had me crying. And to this day, I cannot help but tear up during that movie. It is phenomenal, man. It's long. Get ready for a ride.
Right.
But it's an incredible film, man.
I don't think I've ever seen that. I have a hard time, honestly, talking about Robin Williams in general because of the way he met his end. He died in the same year my dad did. Like, just kind of so much humor and funny stuff. And the whole idea of the Tears of the Clown. You know, it's like, I was somewhat relieved, and I know this is a selfish relief, I was somewhat relieved to find out that he was going through so much, like, he had the Lewy body dementia where he was actually, like, he was losing his mind and he didn't know things, one thing for another. So, I was relieved to find out that he didn't do it for some stupid reason, like money or a girl. Like, he was actually...
He had a mental illness.
Well, he was in physical pain and he was... losing himself. And I know that's a selfish thing to think. But to think, you know, when you have all of that talent and all of that ability and you're just going to throw it all away over some, you know, something that it wasn't that. Because I know people who would give anything to have just another 15 minutes if they could.
Yeah.
And I know we just went really dark, but that's what we do. We're going to move to the next movie.
Damn it. Can I say one thing? Robin Williams had such a love for what he did, though. And that's one of the things I respect the most about him. And what brought on that respect... I stole your beer. Sorry. What brought on that respect for him is Shakes the Clown. As big as Robin Williams was, he loved what he did so much. He was in Shakes the Clown. He had a small part in that. And that's he would involve himself in projects that he believed in, and he just... The band was passionate about what he did. And he did it so fucking well, man.
He really, really did. I read another thing about him that was like he was a well-known joke thief. But not because he ran around stealing jokes. It was because he had a... memory that just... would lock stuff in, and he didn't know necessarily where he got it from. If he heard something funny, it just became part of his repertoire.
Right.
And if somebody came up and was like, whoa, you stole my joke, he'd just like hand him $1,000 and be like, sorry, I didn't mean to. Like, it wasn't me.
He wouldn't take credit for it.
So then actually later on, later in his life, he had people around him to be like, okay, where were you and when did you tell this joke? Because now he's got people following him around just waiting to try to claim the money.
Yep.
And he's so generous that he'll just be like, oh, you okay, I won't use it anymore, and here's some money. I'm like, no, it's very possible that he wrote his own jokes. And he's been doing this for like 35 years, so you can't just walk up to him and like shut him down. Like,
yeah.
He's bigger than you. But no, he was apparently a really good guy.
He wasn't like one of those joke-stealing comedians like Amy Schumer that just steals people's stuff without giving them credit.
Or Carlos Mencia.
Yeah, dude, that Joe Rogan video where he calls him out on stage is crazy. And the thing about it is, I was a huge Carlos Mencia fan.
Rogan took him down.
Oh, yeah. He was like, whoa, we'll finish this right here. Let me call some folks up here.
Rogan buried him.
Well, I don't know if you ever saw the extended one where Rogan actually brings up, you know, he adds clips where he talks to people like Bobby Lee. After the fact, to verify the claims that he made on stage. He brought Carlos Mencia. He basically destroyed his career.
He did. I remember Joe Rogan's like, Bobby Lee, and Bobby Lee's not as big as either one of them, and he's just kind of like, he's smoking a cigarette being like, I don't even want to talk about it. Rogan's like, this is principle, bitch.
Because I think Bobby Lee's the one that coined the term Carlos Mencia. Yeah.
Big stuff. All right, let's touch on these last ones. John Carpenter released a movie that year, The Prince of Darkness.
Yes.
Which is unfairly... I mean, I'll admit I haven't seen it as much as some other Carpenter joints, but it's a good movie. Prince of Darkness is...
Yeah.
There's no... If Prince of Darkness came out now, people would be like, oh my God, look at this. You know, but... Fucking A and a Half Hellraiser came out in 1987.
Another game changer that introduced us to the Cenobites in the world of Clive Barker.
Was that Weave World came out in 1987. Yes,
a book that changed my life.
87 was a good year for Barker.
Oh, yeah.
A good year for Scott. Monster Squad.
Classic movie. Great way to introduce kids to horror, too, by the way. In case you want to find a venue.
The Universal Monsters.
Yes.
But they called Phoebe a bitch.
It's the horror version of Goonies.
Yeah.
Essentially.
But Dracula calls Phoebe a bitch. Frankenstein. That's such a great movie. Still, I still am going to own a hearse with the silver skull...
Hood ornament. We need to get a Scary Dad hearse. This is what I eventually want to see us get.
I've been looking.
Whether you and I get it, we're going to have the Scary Dad logo in the back window. We'll trick it out in black and green.
I've been looking. And somebody had one parked in his yard a few blocks over, but I'm assuming it's part of his Halloween decoration.
Well, Trey said that anytime whenever we're ready for it, he'll find it for us. So he said he has the hookup.
I'm down. I'm ready to get one. After all of these movies, the last one on the list...
It's just one of the ones we talk about often. We did a whole episode on it.
It's a big one.
One of my favorite vampire movies of all time.
One of my favorite movies of all time. Lost Boys. Even Quentin Tarantino in Reservoir Dogs. Remember whenever... Reservoir Dogs, Mr. Pink, or it's not Mr. Pink. Who was Tim Roth? Mr. Orange.
Yes.
When he's trying to build up his drug story, his he's like, I don't know, I'm getting... Everybody's like, weed. Oh, fuck you, I'm trying to watch The Lost Boys in here. The Lost Boys has become so ingrained in pop culture, it's almost hard to escape. The Frog Brothers.
Breakout movie for Kiefer Sutherland, by far.
Big time. Breakout movie for vampire movies in general.
Yeah, it changed the genre at that time because it gave you a new take on the vampire.
They weren't shiny.
Yeah.
They
were relatable.
The Lost Boys were not nice. They were not nice guys.
But they were just like you and me. You know, Fright Night kind of did it a little bit. But Lost Boys really brought it to the mainstream. And it was a game changer for sure.
Those are the ones that were telling you to be scared of those guys over there. Because they might not be They might not have your best interest in mind.
Yeah.
Watched that with my wife not too long ago. I got mixed reviews from her. The first one is, she's like, this is stupid for all of these reasons, which are all the reasons when you watch Lost Boys, you're like, this is stupid. Why would you do that? Why would you say that? If there are like so many dozens of missing children around, why are you going to let your children go run around a boardwalk full of strangers? That's step one. Like, there's so many different little things in Lost Boys that you're like, okay, well, why did you do that? But as a kid, as an 11-year-old, I identified with Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly wanted to be Michael. Fucking A, if I didn't want to be David.
David was badass.
David was awesome.
Leader of the pack, man.
And he's Kiefer Sutherland. Kiefer Sutherland, I don't
care. He's one of my favorite actors of all time, dude.
He's so cool.
You got to realize that I was a huge fan of 24. There's so many movies where his personality just, I'm drawn to it. You know, I love Kiefer Sutherland. I cannot wait. He's on a bucket list for me as far as meeting.
To meet, oh yeah.
And there is a Nika David action figure out there.
Is it out now?
No, it's been out for a while. You got to find it. It's not easy to find. But okay. There's a David and a Michael action figure by Nika. No, not Nika. Mezco.
Mezco.
Yes. I will be getting that for him to sign.
I'll have to.
Because he's doing conventions now. So hope they announce him for Texas Frightmare that's coming. Lloyd, just so you know, I really want to meet Kiefer Sutherland, man.
Just don't hope that the other Dallas convention that just stepped right on top of Texas Frightmare.
It's not going to slow Texas Frightmare down. Texas Frightmare is a movement.
Well, no, I agree. I just hope they don't reach out and try to, like, compete land on horror.
Dude, Texas is, like, huge for conventions right now. You look at some of the folks that are coming down right now. I think this the one coming up in San Antonio 3 weeks after Alamo City is going to... They're going to lose a lot of money this year, I think. But from what I understand, they have huge, deep pockets.
I don't know, dude. Horrorthon didn't charge anything. Got to meet Ari. It was fun. I'm not an autograph hog. I'm not a celebrity hog. You know how we are. We just talk about these things that we like.
Right.
And I would love to put a moment in time into a lot of these. But I'm not going to, like, mortgage my house to do it, which I know a lot of people do. I think Frightmare has the best lineup. They always have the best lineup. They're
for us, for sure.
Well, yeah, for sure. But even if I was a little more mainstream, they still are going to attract me. I'm either going to go Frightmare or I'm not going either. Like, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I'm not going to choose between them.
Yeah.
If the other one on the same weekend has something really, really cool that turns my head, I'm still probably going to edge toward Frightmare just because it's a brilliant place to be. It's so much, like, even if I don't get any autographs, it's still much more fun to be.
See, I'm having an issue right now because you do realize that Frightmare is the weekend before Comicpalooza. And that's a big weekend for me preparing for Comicpalooza with my job. And I'm thinking, I'm going to be able to hook them up this year, man, because I can only take so many days off, and I'm taking a day off for Texas Frightmare weekend to get up to Dallas.
I don't know if I can do either, because I had to, like, cash in, like, 10 years of...
Well, you know, you got to at least do the Saturday with Comicpalooza. We'll have press passes, so...
Well, Comicpalooza is local.
Yeah.
I can't do the 3-day Frightmare.
That's why they need to hurry up and get the high-speed rail from Houston to Dallas so we can run up for the day Texas Frightmare.
Right.
don't have to worry about hotels or anything. Run right back, man.
Hit it and quit it. Guys, if you're listening, please do that. It's late. We got to go.
But just, I want to, in closing, We read some reviews on New Business today. Leave a review. We will read it on air. Even if it's bad, I don't care. We need reviews. Hook us up.
Give us ratings and reviews on iTunes and others. Other platforms as well if you're there. It helps.
Yes.
And with that, keep it scary, guys.
Later.